The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, Dublin were crowned this year's champions in the All-Ireland Ladies Football Final on Sunday after they dominated against Meath. Now, although women's sports are growing more popular and reaching a more widespread audience on media, there's still an imbalance and some barriers compared to the men's games. So we are joined by Women in Sport panel to talk about this a little bit more. Maeve De Burka, former Ireland player and pundit, Dr. Ciara Lostey, lecturer in Southeastern TU, a performance psychologist at the Institute of Sport and on the Jockey Pathway, and our own Kathleen McNamee from Off the Ball, host of the Koi Geek podcast. Good morning and welcome to you one and all. Maeve, I'll go to you first. Encouraging size of a massive crowd in Croker on Sunday for that ladies football final.
Yeah, it was great to see. I think over 48,000 people at it. Yeah, really, really good to see those kind of numbers coming out to support the LGFA. And it was great. I was watching it on telly myself. Really great games on show from the junior final up to the senior final as well. And I think the product on show now is, you know, it's improving year on year. So people aren't just going to support these girls as tokenism. They're going to enjoy the spectacle as well.
Yeah. Now, it's a huge crowd, and obviously it benefited from a number of matches being on the card, as it were, and people stuck around. What was the pricing like? Does anyone know on our panel? You know, was it really punter friendly in terms of pricing?
It was very punter friendly in terms of pricing, and I think that's always been the case with the All-Ireland finals. I remember going to them from when I was a young kid, and you know, the LGFA really makes an effort to try and reach out to clubs and get like big groups of young girls, teams going out. There's family friendly tickets. It's definitely not similar levels to, say, the men's All-Ireland, where you might be forking out a fair whack of cash to try and get to go there.
OK, now I want to talk about the inhibitions in the development of women's sports, and there are a number of them. First of all, we mentioned in passing there audience size and crowd size, which is important because unless you present a spectacle that is watched by many, and even the crowd form part of that spectacle, if a stadium is empty, the spectacle gets diminished. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But participation in sport, I mean, is it growing or is it diminishing? Ciara.
Morning, Pat. When you look at some of the research, we see that girls drop out of sport at twice the rate of boys by age 14. So you've probably seen some of the advertisements now that one in five girls will drop out of sport by the time they'd finish primary school. And that drops to one out of two females by the age of 20 will drop out of a sport. You know, and things like citing not feeling welcome, not feeling good enough, a lack of visibility of role models, particularly in male sports or where sports where males are dominant. So, no, we do have a lot of issues in retention, particularly for females.
Yeah, but Ciara, going back even to before the retention problem, what about the recruitment problem? I mean, do we know to what extent girls are playing sport as much as boys before the dropout starts?
Yeah, we don't. There is a lot of research in relation to that, but there definitely seems to be a continuum in a leaky pipe in that different sports, you know, as in different schools, will have different policies in relation to, you know, physical activity for sports, for PE. So there is probably an underrepresentation of females through sport, through their pathway.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the sports that are offered, there might be a GAA school where there'll be, you know, ladies football or camogie offered. And in some schools, of course, hockey is big. But one of the most popular sports for girls is soccer because, you know, even if you're not particularly great, you can still run around and touch the ball occasionally and you can play in your local green area, put down a couple of jumpers mm-hmm. as a goal and off you go. How many schools are embracing soccer?
I don't know if some of the other panelists might be able to give you some of the statistics there in relation to soccer, but it definitely is one of the most popular sports and it is one of the ones that has kind of transcended, and you'll see from the European finals there and I suppose how they were even, you know, advertised, how they were actually promoted. The rate has been, the uptake in soccer is pretty big in that space.
Maeve, perhaps you can shed light on this, you know, to what extent soccer or association football is available in schools? for girls?
Yeah, I think it's improved year on year, definitely. I mean, when I was in school a while ago now, there was only two sports available to me. But now, definitely, the soccer is increasing for females. And, you know, the FAI are running many different kind of programs to help with that. Even, you know, I know they do the My Body Summer Camps this year, but they also have a lot of underage programs just to get, there's Disney Playmakers program as well to help encourage girls to take up the sport at an early age and kind of intertwine it with Disney as well and just make it more accessible and I suppose more appealing to young girls to start playing the sport. And like that, if we can get them in at grassroots level, I think then it'll be, like we're saying, those dropout rates hopefully then will decrease because we'll have more girls in the sport initially.
Now, Kathleen, as our media person here, the availability of sport to watch on television, how important is that?
Massively so. And I think the soccer example is a great case study of that because we've seen how the growth of being able to access things like the Women's Super League, where we have Katie McKay playing there week in, week out. You know, she's going to play every single game this year in the Emirates in the league. That's massive for young Irish girls to be able to see that. The fact that, you know, I can even see a difference in off the ball, how often we talk about women's sport compared to when I used to listen to it 10 years ago growing up. It was very, very different.
And I presume you were responding to the interest of the listener.
Yeah, and I think this is something that I've had so many arguments with people about it over the years. And I used to work over in ESPN in London and it was kind of similar in that, like, you're always, you know, within the media, you're always fighting for your audience and you want to try and, you know, get that extra percentage. But I think in sport, we've been missing out on a trick for so long that there's 50% of the population there that we haven't really been serving properly. We haven't been saying, actually, no, we are listening to what you want. We are watching the sports that you're watching. Here we are going to talk and analyze it. Now, could the media be better? 100%. I think that when you start from a very, very low starting point, any sort of change is going to feel like a massive sweeping difference. And I don't think that is the case. I think that when we had the 2020 media program, like, that was brilliant to promote more women in sport. But I think we need to be constantly challenging ourselves and saying, well, okay, are we doing enough? Just because we did 10% women's sport this week, is that really enough? Should it not be 30, 40, 50%, whatever it is? And the thing is, they're great stories and they're great personalities. You know, it's not doing something for the sake of it. It's doing it because you're talking to interesting people who have incredible stories.
I think it was Maeve and maybe Ciara also mentioned this business of having role models. And it's extraordinary, Ciara, when you have a Rachel Blackmore in the saddle, it changes the whole perception of that particular sport, does it not?
Yes, absolutely. And you have someone like Rachel Blackmore who kind of, I suppose, broke the glass ceiling in horse racing. You really have to go back to the quote of, you can't be what you can't see. And that's often cited in sports equality movements. And if you don't have athletes who girls and young women can look up to or share their experiences on the TV or in the media or even in leadership roles or in sports science roles as well, without kind of these relatable, you know, applied examples, girls will struggle to envision a future in sport, whether it's recreational or at an elite level like Rachel.
Now, the question then, I think it was you, Maeve, who said at the beginning, you know, whether people feel they are welcome in a sport. What sort of things put girls off continuing in sport? Is it maybe the lack of female coaches in particular sports that they're dealing with males who may not be the most sensitive brutes on the pitch?
I think it's definitely an issue and it's an area we can improve on in terms of the coach education, making it more appealing for women to get involved, whether it is with the soccer, LGFA, Camogie, IRFU, all of them have a lot of coach education in place at the moment, and that's it. It's, if you have, like you're saying, those females in leadership roles or even in terms of refereeing as well, just seeing that visibility of girls being involved, not only playing and seeing the, those role models, which is fantastic to see, and then also just in terms of those leadership roles, seeing women involved in the sport in all areas, it's definitely something that can then make that environment a little bit less maybe intimidating for some, small, like young girls growing up might be slightly intimidated or uncomfortable in those situations. Whereas even if we can educate, even if it is males who are in those positions, that we can educate them on how maybe it's, you know, in terms of coaching girls versus boys, there is very a lot of differences. So just that we can educate whoever is involved in those leadership roles to get the most out of the girls.
Now, will you parse that out a bit for me, the difference in the coaching approach to girls rather than boys? Is it all to do with puberty? Is that where the difficulty arises?
Yeah, I think it's that's definitely a big area. Like, even in terms of girls, up until very recently, a lot of girls are wearing white shorts. And, you know, if a girl can at times feel uncomfortable in that situation, they might be worried at different times of the month if they are playing in white shorts, whereas obviously a boy would never have that issue. Or even if we have toilets available for girls in dressing rooms and that there might be a bin with a lid on the toilet, small little things like that, that might make a difference to girls who are going through puberty, and even just how they might respond to kind of the communication style, whether it's they mightn't like the direct style or that, or and they might prefer a hand on the shoulder just to kind of encourage them in different ways. Yeah, just feedback. I feel like girls maybe need a little bit more feedback in general than boys, or just the emotions involved, hormones, all that type of thing. Body image, whether, you know, our gear is fitting us right going on the pitch, might be a little bit more important to some girls and boys, and that type of thing.
Yeah. And the question you mentioned there in passing, what should be available in dressing rooms and so on. But generally speaking, Kathleen, the facilities available. It's not so long ago we had the Irish soccer team swapping gear, changing gear. They didn't even have their own gear. It was terrible.
I know. And that's at the very elite level. And everything that Maeve is saying there in terms of facilities is true. You know, I'm 28 now. I remember when I was growing up not having a changing room, going into certain facilities, not having a bin to put in a tampon or a pad or whatever it was. Not even maybe having a clear, like the lads would have a dressing room, but there would be no separate space for the women because it was just expected that there wouldn't be girls playing when certain facilities were developed. So I think that's something that's really important to look at and really important to understand about, like, any human would feel uncomfortable. You know, if you went to, I don't know, the swimming pool and there wasn't a spare space for you, you would feel uncomfortable in that. So the fact that you're expecting teenagers or young women to be able to perform to their best and perform to their top ability in these elite sports places without having those facilities is crazy.
So how much progress have we made?
I mean, we're getting there, I think. And I think it's something that there is a lot more focus on and a lot more understanding of. I know that all the separate sports that have been mentioned have all put out different plans to improve those facilities, because there is an acknowledgement that if we do want more girls playing, we do need more space for them. But like, it isn't it as well. It's not just the facilities in terms of changing rooms. It's pitch access and things, because if there's more kids playing, that means there's less access to pitches. So who gets the rights to the pitch, you know?
And is it inevitable that the men kind of push the women off?
I think it's so dependent on the club and the place that you're in, to be honest. You know, I've heard countless stories of the girls getting a third of a pitch to train on when the lads get two thirds. But I've also heard other clubs that are really good at making sure those facilities are shared out and see it as important that there is equal access and equal opportunities. So I think it's a case of people understanding that women's sport isn't this tokenistic thing anymore. You know, it's challenging, it's progressing kids, it's progressing like young leaders within our women as well, which is something important in every aspect of life, not just in sport. You know, I'm sure Claire can talk to it, but like there's plenty of research about how much confidence that it can give you in every aspect of your life later on, even if you don't continue down the elite sports path.
And we know that among the men, I mean, whether they're playing rugby in Blackrock College in Dublin or whether they're playing at the elite level, that they tend to have networks of people. And the same is true of GAA. You know, there was a joke that a star GAA player will never be short of a job.
No, definitely not. And you do. You grow all these networks and you meet all these new people. And it's a school of life, really. And it's a tool that you can use for the rest of your life in some capacity.
Now, I want to ask Kira and Maeve about, you know, what girls say. When you go into schools, Maeve, which I know you do, and you ask them why they've given up sport or why they haven't taken up sport, what did they say?
Yeah, like you said, I go in just with the little and the LGFA in the serious support program, but the main aim would be to decrease that drop off rate we were referring to. But yeah, it is a lot of those. I suppose the girls I'd be dealing with were still playing sports rather than having already dropped out. So it is a lot of that. I think it can be maybe even fear of judgment. You know, if there's boys as well playing or you know watching them play, or that can be an issue for them. And even just the social, I think social pressures now with social media, body image, self-consciousness, that type of thing is definitely a big issue. But also I think not playing as well, the fact there's fewer girls teams, you know, a lot of boys clubs in various sports would have like an ABC team, for example, whereas maybe the girls teams would be limited at this stage of the development where there mightn't be opportunities for girls to play just even at a recreational level. You know, it's yeah, many of those things, even maybe at sometimes like that, it could be too competitive for them. They might just want to play for fun, and it's important that we have those kind of opportunities for the girls as well.
Okay, Ciara, the question of social media and the fact that, you know, if you come a cropper on the field, it's likely to be up online in jig time and maybe embarrass you, that kind of stuff. Also, whether girls make choices. They see maybe, you know, doing the junior cert, doing the leaving cert as much more important than playing sport. And we know that girls are outperforming boys academically now all the time.
Yeah, so it's kind of the socialisation into sport and the messages that we send to our boys and our girls. And that's probably where the media coverage comes in to really, I suppose, highlight those role models, highlight the success stories, highlight that participation throughout the life span is possible. But we also have to highlight diverse athletes, diverse sports from all different backgrounds, sizes, shapes, that sport is inclusive in that way, that there is a space and place for everybody, whether it's from a participation perspective or to an elite level. So that providing the school and community-based access to female mentors. So, you know, mentoring women and keeping women within the system and within the sports coaching system too is really important, so that women are mentoring women through the particular pathway. So that evidence-informed future practice and policies is really important to make sure that's actually happening on the ground, and that needs an intentional investment from the people who are calling the shots in those places.
Well, finally, I should ask each of you, you know, where are we on the way? If 10 out of 10 is perfection, where are we in terms of women's sports now?
I would say like halfway there, maybe. I'm not madly optimistic just because of the funding structures that are available in some of the supports that we have. But I also think there's a lot of brilliant people working in this area who are doing a lot of amazing work, especially at grassroots level, to get around that. So positive in that aspect, but I think there is still a long way to go.
Maeve?
Yeah, I'd be maybe towards the six or hopefully pushing the seven soon enough out of 10. And yeah, I think like Kathleen said, a lot of work has been done. There's been such progress, like even if I look at the last 20, 25 years in Galway, even where I'm from, and just the progress at grassroots levels in many sports, just so much more girls' opportunities there. But definitely moving in the right direction. I think we can learn from other countries who are ahead in our development too in various different sports, and try to take you know, learnings and lessons from them as well to keep moving in the right direction.
And finally, Ciara.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Maeve there. I think there's some great international perspectives we can look at, but I really think it's changing, but it's definitely not there. We need intentional investment, women-centric program to really help break the cycle of underrepresentation.
All right. Thank you, all three. Maeve de Bourcq, a former Ireland player and pundit, Dr. Ciara Lostey, lecturer in Southeastern TU, performance psychologist in the Institute of Sport and on the Jockey Pathway, and Kathleen McNamee from Off the Ball. Thank you, one and all.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.